From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. North Korea is on a tear, and the timing could not be worse. Today, South Korea rejected a North Korean overture to jointly oppose the United States. Seoul warned Pyongyang to stop its saber-rattling and instead urged North Korea to take steps to ease the crisis over its nuclear program. South Korea also held talks today with North Korea's longtime ally, China, in hopes of defusing a showdown between Washington and Pyongyang. The Bush administration calls the situation serious but has stopped short of calling it a crisis, at least so far. In this hour, On Point, Washington faces a nuclear second front in North Korea. We begin with Michael O'Hanlon, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, who says the Korean Peninsula is in crisis and the Bush administration's North Korea policy is failing. It's time, he says, for a hard-nosed negotiation with Pyongyang. I asked O'Hanlon to explain what has brought us to such a dangerous pass with North Korea.
Well, I think the Bush administration really has misjudged the way to deal with North Korea. On the one hand, Mr. Bush's sentiments about how North Korea was part of an axis of evil and how it was ruled by a loathsome regime, they were accurate in terms of understanding the nature of life inside North Korea, so it's hard to fault the president too much for that. On the other hand, Mr. Bush's job as president, clearly, is to advance American interests and not to just be caught up in his own reactions, emotional or moral or political, to another regime. And sometimes you have to deal with people you don't like. We dealt with Stalin during World War II. We dealt with the Soviets during the Cold War, and Mr. Bush has been unwilling to deal with the North Koreans. And I think that led them to one of two conclusions. Either they better get a nuclear arsenal fast so we don't come after them once we finish with Saddam Hussein.
This is North Korea thinking we'd better arm up.
That's right. North Korea thinking we could be the next target of the preemption doctrine and the axis of evil sort of regime change philosophy of Mr. Bush. Or we need money and diplomatic engagement so badly, and our only way to get that is through brinkmanship and extortion, that we better up the ante and threaten to develop even more dangerous weapons. Now, either way, you don't admire North Korea. There's nothing to be said in defense of North Korea, regardless of which of those strategies it's following. But because it was so predictable that it would take one of those two strategies, I think Mr. Bush's approach so far has been a failure and really a major mistake of his administration.
Now, things were not going perfectly under the Clinton administration. You've written North Korea was asking for large sums of money for not doing things that it shouldn't have been doing anyway, like missile development, that it turns out it was doing underground basement bomb development sometime in the late 1990s. Was it really so great even before George Bush came to office?
No, you're right. It was not great. And again, one unfortunate thing about the North Korea issue, it often degenerates into a partisan debate in the United States. Republicans were very critical of the Clinton approach during the 90s. Now some Clinton people are coming out and saying Mr. Bush really has blown it. I think it's better to say, as Americans, we've all got a problem here. We tried a certain strategy in the 1990s, a strategy of engagement and detente and diplomacy, and it worked to an extent, but it did not work perfectly. And there were some major problems that were going to have to be addressed once we figured out, especially about this uranium enrichment effort that you mentioned, the basement bomb program. So you need to be tough with the North Koreans, and the Bush administration did not inherit an easy problem. Those two things are true. But what I'm saying simply is that we have to negotiate from a position of strength and a position of toughness with the North Koreans, but we do have to negotiate. And the idea that you can somehow ignore this problem or just hope it sorts itself out or hope the North Koreans come to their senses or hope they collapse because of their own economic weakness, these are just hopes. They're not serious strategies, and we need a serious strategy because this is a very serious crisis.
Michael Hanlon, you write that the situation is much worse than it was 2 years ago when George Bush took office. What are the elements of that deterioration?
Well, you can measure it partly in terms of just nuclear capability, that 2 years ago when Mr. Bush took office, the North Koreans probably had one or two nuclear bombs, and that may be all they have today, but within 6 months, they could have 10. And you could say, well, what's the big difference between 1 or 2 and 10? Well, if they have 10, they can try to attack us in different ways during a future war, if there is a war, and maybe 1 or 2 of those bombs get through. They could threaten to sell the bombs to terrorists. They have not been engaged with terrorists much recently, but they could change that policy. Their having 10 could also provoke a nuclear arms race in Northeast Asia and the South Koreans and Japanese could want nuclear arms as a result. So I think 10 is a lot worse than 1 or 2, and that's the main thing. We're now facing the imminence of a North Korean nuclear arsenal that could number 10 weapons by the end of the calendar year.
So in that circumstance, you're saying don't just talk tough, go in and negotiate. The Bush administration is essentially calling that a path of appeasement.
Well, that's why I think we have to change the terms of negotiation. That's why I say you dealt with Stalin, you dealt with Brezhnev, we dealt with a lot of unsavory people in our history. And quite often we were negotiating, but we're negotiating from a position of strength and true to our own principles. And what you tell the North Koreans is, listen, if you want any diplomatic recognition, if you want more aid to help transform your economy, you're going to have to come clean on a whole lot of things that you're doing wrong right now, starting with nuclear weapons, but also release the Japanese kidnapping victims, agree to a long-term moratorium on missile testing, and start to reduce your conventional military forces that are so threatening near the DMZ and near the South Korean capital of Seoul. And if you make progress on all of those things, we will simultaneously begin to help you with aid that can help you gradually transform your economy. That's the sort of roadmap or the grand vision or the big plan I think we need to offer the North Koreans. They may or may not take it, but you don't have to appease them. You say, listen, we're going to place a lot of demands on you, and if you want any help from us, you're going to have to make good on these demands, because right now you're in a habit of extortion and blackmail, and you're running your economy into the ground by excessive military spending, and we cannot tolerate these things.
But that would, in effect, be a grand bargain being proposed by the United States, by Seoul, by Tokyo, perhaps together.
That's right. It's a grand bargain, but it's one that essentially requires the North Koreans to change their basic way of doing business. So it's essentially requiring them to repent and adopt a new course, at least gradually.
Is there reason to believe that Pyongyang has the internal willingness or capability to make those kind of very substantial changes you're talking about, surrendering their nukes, stop the sales of missiles, giving back the Japanese kidnapped victims, and very significantly beginning to cut back on conventional military forces? Could even begin to imagine doing that?
Well, yeah, because on each one of those points, there is progress. On the nuclear issue, of course, they did sign the agreed framework in 94 and gave up the ability to produce 10 or 15 bombs a year. And even if they now have one or two, that's a lot less than the 50 they could have had. On the missiles, they did agree to stop testing long-range missiles after 1998. On the kidnapping victims, they did allow five of the victims to go back to Japan, at least temporarily. On the economic reform, they have allowed the creation of a couple of small special economic zones. I don't claim that the North Koreans have changed their ways or changed their stripes. I don't claim there's anything particularly redeeming about President Kim Jong-il. And I think Mr. Bush's basic diagnosis of that being a loathsome regime is correct. However, there is a building block in each one of these areas that we should test the North Koreans to see if they want to then go to the next step on. And maybe they are trying to change, and they just need to have the right set of inducements and the right set of tough demands on them to keep this process moving forward.
Do you see anything, Michael O'Hanlon, in the Bush administration's language of the last several days that indicates this White House is prepared to go into a grand bargain negotiation or anything like it?
I do know that they don't want war, and I commend them for that. I think they're right to say that Iraq should be a higher priority for possible military action than North Korea. So let me fully support the president on that point. And if you're going to try to use diplomacy, the question is, what does the diplomacy consist of? It's not just going to be having cups of tea indefinitely into the future. You've got to have an agenda. And so by implication, I think they're starting to move in that direction. But we may not have enough time to just gradually sort this thing out. If we had 5 years, maybe the Bush administration or its successor would gradually get the policy right. But I think they've got to focus on this problem right now. And in that regard, I greatly admire Colin Powell, but what he said over the weekend was just flat out wrong when he denied this is not a crisis. This is a major foreign policy crisis for the United States, and we have to treat it as such.
And be tough, but be tough, you say, Michael O'Hanlon, in negotiations.
Exactly.
Michael O'Hanlon, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Michael O'Hanlon is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He spoke with us earlier from Washington. North Korea has revved up its nuclear threat and kicked out international inspectors. The world watches it all with suppressed horror, hoping that history does not repeat itself. The Korean War left more than 33,000 Americans dead and some 100,000 wounded. Millions of Koreans died. Though an armistice was signed in July 1953, almost 50 years later, there is no formal peace treaty and tensions are soaring. President Bush has named North Korea as part of the Axis of Evil. North Korea is said to fear a U.S. military strike and is talking tough. Should Washington talk with Pyongyang or let it stew in nuclear-armed isolation? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Ashton Carter, Professor of Science and International Affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and a longtime North Korea watcher. From 1993 to 96, he served in the Clinton administration as Assistant Secretary of Defense. In 1998, he was Senior Advisor to the North Korea Policy Coordinator. Good evening and welcome, Ash Carter.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us. You just heard Michael O'Hanlon's diagnosis sitting in Washington, watching as we're all watching what's going on here. I guess first question, what do you make of his argument? Has the Bush administration policy on North Korea failed? And is it time to put a grand bargain on the table and say, you step up to all these very difficult demands and we've got something to talk about here?
Well, people have talked about a grand bargain with North Korea for many years. And the problem is that there are lots of different varieties of grand bargain.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be prepared to know what you want and what you're prepared to do when you sit down. That is, you have to have a strategy. What isn't apparent yet from the Bush administration is that they have figured out what their strategy is. That is, which of the things you want North Korea to do you want them to do most, and what are you prepared to do in return? Now, the current situation reminds me most of 1994 when I was in office, which was entirely similar in that North Korea was at Yongbyon, their plutonium research mm-hmm. facility, in the process of removing fuel rods from their reactor, which fuel rods contained then, as they still do, five or six bombs worth of plutonium. And at that time, I spent about half the year, 1994, planning for war on the Korean
Peninsula. And it was nip and tuck. We came very, very close.
Well, and in particular, we devised a plan. It has now been revealed for a number of years to attack Yongbyon and destroy it, which we were very confident we could do, including the operating reactor there.
It was still under construction in 1994.
No, the reactor was operating.
All right.
There were some other reactors also under construction. We could have destroyed them all, including the operating reactor, which is a trick because an operating reactor represents a radiological hazard.
But my understanding, Ash Carter, is that today that's no longer possible, that there would be radioactive, exhaust from
no,
such
an
attack.
No, in fact, it's easier today because the reactor is not operating and the fuel has been removed and has been cooling for quite a while. So it's a better situation today. But that's
until they rev it back up.
Until they rev it back mm-hmm. up. But that's not the real problem
okay.
with attacking Yongbyon.
Mm-hmm.
Within its own frame, that would be a surgical strike
right.
that would be entirely, as I said, from a narrow military point of view, successful. The problem with attacking Yongbyon is that the near certain response to that on the part of North Korea would be the unleashing of their 1.1 million man army on the DMZ, just a few tens of kilometers from Seoul.
And does that not essentially mean we cannot attack North Korea?
Well, my point is that that's not what we said in 1994. What we said to the North Koreans in 1994 is that we could not tolerate a nuclear North Korea. And it's worth pausing for a moment on why that's the case, because there are several
mm-hmm.
reasons,
all
any
right.
one of which would warrant the kinds of risks we were willing to run in 1994. The first reason why it would be a major setback for U.S. security to allow a nuclear North Korea is that if North Korea came into possession of nuclear weapons, they might come to believe that they could scare away or chase away us as South Korea's defenders. And that might make war on the Korean Peninsula, that very war I was describing, mm-hmm. which would be a horrible war, mm-hmm. more likely. Second, if North Korea gets nuclear weapons, then all of its neighbors need to start asking themselves a question we don't want them asking themselves.
And it's already being asked in Japan, for example.
Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, countries that have in past times flirted with nuclear weapons and stepped back. And third, there could be a domino effect around the world entirely. If a regime like North Korea is allowed to go nuclear by mm-hmm. the United States, where do you stand?
And it's rejecting nonproliferation or talking about rejecting
exactly.
that whole entire treaty.
It jeopardizes the entire global nonproliferation regime. And finally, North Korea isn't going to be here forever, which means that when it breaks up, we'll have the same problem we had when the Soviet Union broke up of a potential for loose nukes.
So when Colin Powell says it's not a crisis, he's using a diplomatic structure here.
Colin Powell needs to make it clear, and I think the United States needs to make it clear to North Korea, as we did in 1994, that this touches the gravest best security interests of this country.
We are talking grave security interests tonight, North Korea nukes and the untimely crisis on the Korean Peninsula. You can join us. Is it time for a grand bargain with North Korea, or would that be appeasement when Pyongyang is building nukes? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I believe this situation with North Korea will be resolved peacefully. As I said, it's a diplomatic issue, not a military issue, and we're working all fronts.
That was President Bush speaking today at his ranch in Crawford, Texas. We are talking tonight about North Korea, nukes, and the untimely crisis on the Korean Peninsula. My guest in studio is Ashton Carter. He's professor of science and international affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and was deeply involved in dealing with North Korea throughout the 1990s. You are welcome to join the conversation as well. Is the Bush administration hardline working with North Korea? Do you believe Colin Powell when he says this is not a crisis, and should Washington talk with Pyongyang or let it stew in its nuclear poverty? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Ash Carter, we've got more folks to join us, but before we do, what would you be doing right now? What do you think of the Bush administration's balance of carrot and stick? Is it too much stick and not enough carrot?
Well, I don't think anything's been offered to North Korea yet by the administration, because I don't think it has formulated its strategy yet, nor has it even decided whether it's going to negotiate with North Korea.
Though, interestingly, today we see this news that next week South Korea, Japan, and American representatives will sit down and talk about
that. We're talking with our allies, and that's a good thing. We've asked our allies to talk to North Korea. That's a good thing. But at the end of the day, we need to decide what we're prepared to say to North Korea. And there's no point in entering into negotiation unless you have decided what you want. Now, I think that a position of nonchalance or feigned nonchalance about North Korea's nuclear program, which you referred to a moment ago as stewing in their own nuclear juice, that's a very dangerous posture. I think we need to tell
North
Korea.
But that's where we are right now.
That's where we are right now, and we need to tell North Korea, like we did in 1994, that a nuclear North Korea is not acceptable to the United States. Now, I say that because there are some other things that I think can be perfectly acceptable to the United States.
Such as?
Well, for example, the continued existence of North Korea as a state. That's what they crave most, which is to run that strange, Stalinist, poor throwback unmolested. Now, you need to ask yourself a question, which we did in 1998 when President Clinton asked us to review our strategy, which was, are you prepared to say to North Korea, we're not after you, you can continue to run
be
your
North
country.
Korea.
You can be North Korea. We don't like that. But that's not doesn't
that's
touch
your
the vital interests of the United States or international security. But a nuclear North Korea is not on. We seem to be saying almost the opposite right now, which is we don't like North Korea and we're not prepared to accept the continuation of the regime, as if we knew what to do about that.
That's what you think Pyongyang's reading between the lines.
I don't think it's been said to them very clearly. Here's a red line,
right,
which is nuclear weapons. And I think
not your
needs
existence,
to be said
but the
to
weapons.
Them, it needs to be said to them that we can keep on keeping on with you, odd as you are and offensive to our values as you are, but we can't keep on keeping on with you if you have nuclear weapons. That's what they need to hear. And they're hearing almost the opposite, I fear, right
in
now.
In that they've been included in the axis of evil. President Bush is taking after Kim Jong-il, saying, heck, here's a guy who starves millions of his people, the kind of drumbeat that began on Saddam Hussein.
But nuclear weapons are not a problem.
Well,
that's the opposite
of
the message that they
Or at least they're so darn difficult to figure out what to say about that not much is being said publicly.
Well, I think that in order to begin these negotiations, you need to state very clearly what it is you're after and what you're prepared to accept and what you're not prepared to accept. We should not be prepared to accept nuclear weapons on the North Korea. If the Bush administration allows North Korea to go nuclear, that's an enormous setback for American security.
It's hard to believe they would even be pretending to do that if it were not for the Iraq front, which seems to be on the verge of breaking open.
Well, you can count on the North Koreans to pick the most the worst timing possible. And it was predicted, entirely predictable by most Korea watchers, that they would choose this moment to go back to Yongbyon and try to play the same old game. So that shouldn't come as any surprise. Now, we can walk and chew gum at the same time, and Iraq's a necessary national interest as well. But What we can't afford to do is ignore, kick the can down the road, tell
the neighbors tell our, to deal with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's too important to us.
Ash Carter, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Han Park. He's joining us from Athens, Georgia tonight. He's professor of political science and director of the Center for the Study of Global Issues at the University of Georgia, author of North Korea, The Politics of Unconventional Wisdom. Good evening and welcome, Han Park.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be here.
Han Park, you've been listening to the conversation. You've also been in conversation with representatives of North Korea. How does Pyongyang see what's going on here? Are we somehow being too hard on North Korea, putting all the blame on their doorstep?
Pyongyang would like to be heard. It seems to me that Pyongyang's position, their message are not going anywhere. They would like to let us understand their situation. A system that is isolated without any traditional ally, China has changed, Soviet Union disappeared, Eastern European countries not there anymore, economically devastated now, and surrounded by economically and more importantly militarily stronger adversarial parties across the border. In time of war, and we have to be mindful of the fact that the Korean War has not ended.
Formally, in any case.
Formally, and in fact, if you go to South Korea, you don't feel any atmosphere of confrontation or conflict. But if you go to North Korea, I've been there more than 35 times.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I go there and I feel like I'm in a battle zone. In that situation, and I think we are telling our enemies to disarm, to dismantle weapons in time of war, I don't think it will work.
Are you saying that the United States has to accept a nuclear-armed North Korea?
No.
Can the U.S. possibly accept that?
And I'm saying we have to conclude the unnecessary continuation of the Korean War. We've replaced by some sort of security system or safety system whereby North Koreans will not feel that imminent threat.
Why is North Korea bargaining with nuclear weapons? Isn't that just about as dangerous a gambit as any nation could consider?
Well, frankly, they have nothing else to bargain with. They have no economic leverage, no political leverage, even security. It's not really security-wise very strategically important location anymore. We are out of Cold War. So they don't have anything else.
And what do they want?
Well, they want, first of all, they want the security. In fact, they're spending enormous amount of national resources for military, and they like to cut that down.
So does that mean that North Korea honestly fears an invasion by South Korea, by the United States, and did it fear that even before the Axis of Evil speech?
Even before that, that's what they fear, and the leadership used that in invariably. In fact, North Korea, there's not one North Korea. There's a civilian sector and a very, very strong the military sector. And I think all these weapons talks, nuclear programs, and all these are managed and decided upon by the military sector. Yes, they like to have a security, but now more immediately they like to have the resumption of shipment of the oil. They like to have some cash flow in from Japan. They like to be able to sell their weapons so that they need some that they get some foreign currency.
So, do you think the United States, Japan, South Korea should sit down with North Korea now and get into a big bargaining mode, the grand bargain mode that Michael O'Hanlon described?
And absolutely. And I think the Kido arrangement, Korea Peninsula Energy Development Organization of 1994, was a variation of grand bargaining. You had a consortium of countries dealing with North Korea. But I think somehow we have to have multilateral approach to this, including the United States. And I have the reason to believe that America going through our allies in that region will not be very fruitful. North Korea has made it very clear that it is not going to involve a third party, and they're not going to listen to anyone else but the United States.
Though this is what Washington has been pushing for China, for South Korea, even Japan, to talk to North Korea. Ash Carter, What do you make of this misreading of North Korea by the U.S. to some extent, perhaps, and certainly of the United States by North Korea?
Well, I think a grand bargain is a nice phrase, but at the end of the day, I don't think the North Koreans are looking for a grand bargain, and I don't think we need to be looking for a grand bargain. We need to be asking ourselves, what is it that really matters to us? Now, at the top of the story, three things were mentioned, three objectives for the United States. Mm-hmm. One was an end to weapons of mass destruction in North Korea. A second was a reduction in the conventional threat by North Korea.
So North Korea's very large conventional military.
And third was somehow some change in regime or change in behavior of the North Korean government. Now, which of those things do you think it's most important to ask for? We certainly felt when we conducted a North Korea policy review in 1998 and 2000 that eliminating the weapons of mass destruction was the most important thing. We were not prepared to talk about conventional weapons with North Korea for a couple of reasons. First of all, we have forces in South Korea, and the South Koreans have a very able armed forces, which is an important part of deterrence on the Korean Peninsula, and we weren't prepared to bargain any of that away. Second, we told the North Koreans, your conventional forces are enough. You don't need nuclear weapons. We're not going to attack you, not because we can't defeat you, but because a war on the Korean Peninsula is a bloody mess for everybody, and we have no reason to go after you. And third, as regards their regime and their conduct, we made it clear that that was not a regime that we admired, but it wasn't one that it was an American interest to overthrow, undermine, overturn in some way. So when you talk about grand bargain, you really need to decide what matters most. What matters is the weapons of mass destruction. That's the key to U.S. and international security.
But isn't part of the problem here, Ash Carter, that even during that Clinton perspective, that Clinton regime of interaction with North Korea, what we heard about from Michael Hanlon was this uranium enrichment program going on, the basement bomb, he calls it, that was going on in spite of that. North Korea was not living up to its end of the bargain even during that period.
That's the reason why when you talk about a grand bargain, you also have to remember anything you do with North Korea, you have to make verifiable. You can't count that on North Korea abiding by any agreement it makes unless you can be there. Now, when we agreed on the freeze at Yongbyon on their nuclear activity, we had verification. We had people right there to see that they were doing what they were doing.
That's now
gone.
We
didn't have everybody all around the country making sure they weren't doing uranium, and we never believed that we knew that they were not up to something somewhere else in the country. So any deal you make, you need to be able to verify. So this is why talking about grand bargain, it sounds great, but at the end of the day, it has to be verifiable if it's with the North Korean regime, and you have to figure out what you want most.
Ash Carter, Han Park, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation Sun Yong Lee. He's joining us from Seoul, South Korea. He's a professor of international politics and Korean history at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Sun Yong Lee, thanks for getting up so early, Seoul, South Korea time, to join us. Welcome.
It's my pleasure. Hi.
So there you are in that city so famously close to the DMZ. What is the perspective from South Korea of what's going on with North Korea, Washington, and the nuclear crisis, I guess, that we've got here? What's the South Korean perspective?
Well, everyday news coming out of the peninsula defies reason, defies ready comment, it seems. There's grave concern, of course, on the part of Koreans, not so much on the part of the Korean public. The Korean public, which has become inured to threats from North Korea over the past half century, but on the parts of many people with a knowledge of North Korea and the international politics surrounding the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia, there's grave concern that the U.S.-South Korean alliance is being severely tested at this moment.
Because South Koreans feel, and I guess outgoing President Kim Dae-jung has said, that the U.S. in its policy of containing, trying to contain North Korea, is making a mistake.
Yes, that was not particularly well-phrased or diplomatically phrased public comment. And also the incoming president, the president-elect, as you know, we just had elections last December, December 19th. The president-elect, Noh, also has publicly said that he does not support the U.S. policy vis-a-vis North Korea. And a few days ago, at a visit to a military camp, he, the president-elect Noh, even mentioned publicly a possible withdrawal of U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula. Presence of the 37,000 U.S. troops on the Korean Peninsula, this is essential. It has been essential to the prosperity of South Korea over the past 50 years. The Americans, it's not just the number of American soldiers who are stationed here, the 37,000, but with that, American weapons, U-2 spy planes and so forth, F-16 fighter jets, which are irreplaceable should the United States leave.
Sun Yung Lee, take us to the heart of this crisis, and I think we're agreeing here tonight that, it does seem to be a crisis. Our guest, Han Park, who's joined us from Georgia tonight, says it is not fair to put all the blame on North Korea, that North Korea has its own interests which are being ignored here. Do you share that view?
Not exactly, no. While we should, we being the United States and the allies of the United States, while we should be sensitive to the needs and the historical background of North Korea, a very strong sense of victimization the North Koreans have harbored for the past 50 years or 100 years, Koreans having been a colony for much of the first part of the 20th century.
Of Japan.
While we ought to be aware of such historical and cultural facts, what is undeniable is that, as Dr. Carter just mentioned, the North Koreans cannot be trusted. This vexing problem has been created by North Korea's blatant violation of the 1994 agreed framework. This is not just non-compliance or circumvention. It's far more than that.
So do you see an answer here that would both satisfy South Korea and Washington's instincts? A path ahead?
Well, for South Korea, this is what many people here worry in a nutshell. The absolute priority for the United States since 9/11 is its own homeland security. Mm-hmm. If the U.S. feels cornered, if the United States feels or procures credible evidence that the North Koreans are transporting, exporting nuclear missiles or nuclear know-how to terrorists, what options does the United States have but to pull its troops from South Korea, which in large part lie hostage to North Koreans? The North Koreans know that the United States is reluctant to attack North Korea due to the presence of its own men on South Korean soil. And then the United States, although this is the most unpalatable option, might consider and will, perhaps even will, attack North Korea. Any U.S. administration will seriously consider this, should there be credible evidence of threat from North Korea to its own homeland security. And that would be a catastrophe for the region and most certainly for South Korea.
Sounds bad. Han Park, Sun Yung Lee says Pyongyang simply cannot be trusted.
Really, in fact, no government can be trusted transparent way when it comes to a matter of national security and defense postures. What I say is it's not that we give credence to North Korean position. We have to recognize that North Korea is a system that will not disappear anytime soon.
Han Park, stand by. We're going to come back and talk more about that. Right. We are looking at North Korea nukes and the untimely crisis on the Korean Peninsula. If it comes to it, do you believe the U.S. can fight two wars at once, one on the Korean Peninsula? Is that imaginable? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about North Korea's nuclear threat and America's response. Here is what President Bush said today about North Korea's President Kim Jong-il.
What I worry about is, and a leader like Kim Jong-il is somebody who starves his people. The United States of America is the largest, one of the largest, if not the largest, donor of food to the North Korean people. And one of the reasons why the people are starving is because the leader of North Korea hasn't seen to it that their economy is strong or that they'd be fed.
That was President Bush today on his ranch in Crawford, Texas. We're talking tonight about North Korean nukes and the untimely crisis on the Korean Peninsula. I'm joined tonight by Ashton Carter. He is at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government and was intimately involved in the Clinton administration's handling of the North Korea problem in the 1990s. From Athens, Georgia, by Han Park, professor of political science and director of the Center for Study of Global Issues at the University of Georgia. And from Seoul, South Korea, Sun Yung Lee, professor of international politics and Korean history at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. You can join us as well. What is the best way to talk North Korea off the nuclear ledge? What is at risk here? And is Washington offering the right combination of carrot and stick? What should it offer? What should it say to Pyongyang? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Alan's calling. Welcome, Alan. You're on the air.
Yes, how are you, Tom?
Well, thanks.
Yes. I think we have more of a problem on our hands than we realized here. And one issue that I have is that within 6 to 8 weeks, they may very well have nuclear weapons on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if they're building these nuclear weapons, sanctions will be completely enforced, and then the government may collapse. And after the collapse of the North Korean government, what's to stop these nuclear devices from being sold on the black market?
Alan, you're jumping ahead. I get the black market point. We'll come to it, but you're jumping ahead there. You believe that if and when it's clear there are nukes, sanctions will be enforced. What do you imagine those sanctions would be?
Well, I think they're going to try and blockade the country, but and also starve them out. And I think when you starve people and make them desperate, it's like a starving, desperate animal. They may react very, very adversely. And I don't think China really wants this thing to resolve so quickly either, because if the Korean economy gets damaged and the Japanese economy gets damaged, then they become even more of an economic giant in Asia. They just fill up all the holes economically with goods and services that Japan and South Korea will no longer able to fill. So war might be in their advantage economically.
So you imagine China kind of happy to see turmoil there, and yet it's a nuclear threat we're talking about. Alan, thanks for your thoughts and your call. Ash Carter, can you imagine, well, as you say, first of all, the Bush administration hasn't stood up and said, we will not permit nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula. Is it not clear enough at this point for them to say that? Are we waiting for some other evidence of nukes there, as Alan suggests, to lay down whatever the U.S. position is?
Well, I think it's fine to say that it's not a crisis. I understand what Colin Powell is implying, which is that he is looking forward to devising some sort of approach for dealing.
He doesn't want it to be a crisis.
He doesn't want it to be a crisis. Mm. But the fact of the matter is that at Yongbyon, if they begin reprocessing those fuel rods, as your caller indicates, we're just a few weeks away from bombs in the hands of the North Koreans, which, as I said earlier, for a whole host of reasons, is a major setback for U.S. Security. Now, we didn't pick the timing of this, but it was entirely predictable. North Korea's had this card in its hands for quite a while. So crisis, no crisis, whatever you call it, very quickly this can develop into a major and irreversible setback for U.S. security. So we need to have an approach to it, and simply saying you don't like them, which is easy to say, or that you're going to talk to them at some point, which is also easy to say, isn't the same as a strategy for how you're going to stop this matter.
And Sung-Yun Lee in Seoul, if and when it becomes overwhelmingly obvious that North Korea not only has nuclear weapons but may be building more and building more rather quickly, what's the action that's expected? What do you think Washington will do? Do you think Washington's just sitting back because a war in Iraq looms so close?
Yes, and I don't know if this has been mentioned on your program. I just tuned in.
Mm-hmm.
But there is credible evidence that the United States, the CIA, has known that North Korea has already possessed two nuclear weapons or so since the early 1990s.
Since the administration of Bush 1?
Yes, indeed, yes. So this is a tacit, if not consent, then just living with North Korea as a weak.
Suggesting then, Sung-Yun Lee, that the United States will simply get used to the idea of nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula?
No, I don't think so. But at this point, we know that negotiations, agreements, talks for the sake of talking with North Korea often turn out to be futile. What is essential in all of this is China's role. And we know that neither China nor South Korea nor Japan, none of the powers surrounding the Korean Peninsula wants a nuclear Korean Peninsula. What might drive the Chinese into putting more pressure on North Korea is, paradoxically, ironically, just that, the nuclearization of Northeast Asia. If Japan were to nuclearize itself, that would be a most unpalatable scenario for the Chinese, and the Chinese might then feel forced to put more pressure on the North.
So what do you think China would be waiting for? There's already conversation in Japan about breaking the enormous taboo on development nuclear weapons. It's a long way from that actual development, but we're told it would only take Japan, well, less than a year to come up with a nuclear weapon if it made that decision. Surely this is a real-time issue for Beijing.
Right. If things turn out in such a manner that North Korea openly becomes a nuclear power, then there would be great forces at work. There would be great pressure within Japan to nuclearize itself, too. And then perhaps it might be too late, but I think that will drive the Chinese to do its best to put more pressure in the North. What we all fear in the region, as your caller just mentioned, is the collapse of North Korea. It would be great if the North Korean regime, if Kim Jong-il would just go away, but we have very little reason to believe in such an optimistic scenario. But the collapse of North Korea would be a worrisome scenario for outcome for China as well as for South Korea at this point.
And Han Park, do you see a peaceful solution in this whole crisis-strewn horizon? What's the way out of this? I don't hear a lot of confidence in the government in Pyongyang. Certainly the Bush administration has never expressed much confidence in negotiating with North Korea. Are we headed toward a military confrontation as awful as that sounds?
I think there has to be a solution. That solution has to be a peaceful one. The military solution is not going to work. And then we have regional dissension, disagreement with the United States. Even South Korea, Japan may not go along with the military proposition here because they're going to be the direct victims of any kind of military skirmishes there. Let me make a comment on this scenario.
Yes,
please. The scenario is North Korea will collapse. In my opinion, North Korea is not going to collapse. Before the commercials, I mentioned the fact that North Korea is going to be here for good. In 1994, when Kim Il-sung died, everyone suggested that North Korea will not last very long. Maybe not 3 years at most. In fact, in my opinion, the Kido arrangement was made quite easy because all these parties assumed that the system of North Korea will not last very long. I don't think that if a country is going to collapse because of the starvations and the economic difficulties, North Korea would have collapsed many times over.
But aren't North Koreans pretty sick of the poverty and oppression that marks their country, their government?
People are, yes, but they don't blame their own government. Their ideology is such that, in fact, North Korea is a community of sectarian religious group. They're thoroughly brainwashed.
Kind of a giant cult. Ash Carter, what about this notion that North Korea will fall along the East German model sooner or later, maybe sooner?
Well, logic, history, human nature would indicate that this regime can't keep tottering on forever. But let me just remind you, it's been around for quite a while.
It has.
It's lasted 12 years since the end of the Cold War. When we were looking at various strategies towards North Korea, we looked very hard at the strategy of undermining the North Korean regime.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, you'd have to have some indication somewhere that there were divisions in the regime, that there was a faction that you might be able to exploit in opposition to
points
the regime.
Of opportunity. Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't, and I examined all the intelligence information on this matter, not just U.S. intelligence, but Russian intelligence, Chinese intelligence, South Korean intelligence. And the fact of the matter is that after three generations of Stalinist indoctrination, you are hard-pressed to find anyone in North Korea who voices any kind of opposition. All of their defectors, and we have some high-level defectors, when asked, did you tell anybody about the thoughts you had? Did you ever conspire with anyone? He said no. Soldiers who have infiltrated South Korea from North Korea who have been captured, most of them commit suicide. Those we've captured have all said they wanted to go back.
So we shouldn't project our sense of how people will act onto North Korea.
Well, in particular, you can't make a strategy of doing something you don't really know how to do. It would be nice if we could think of some way of changing the North Korean regime, but to make that the basis of American strategy when you have no clue to how to accomplish it is not good strategy.
So, Han Park, it sounds like a vote in concurrence with you there. Siddiqui's calling. Welcome, Siddiqui. You're on the air. Good evening.
Very quick. You know, I've got a different take in the situation.
All right.
You know, I believe that this has been a brilliant strategy by North Korea to checkmate the Bush administration. I don't think anything that has happened by accident. You have Bush talking about the axis of evil and that there's a crisis with Iraq and we're going in, even though there's no verification of weapons of mass destruction. You have a delegation from the U.S. that goes to North Korea and says, we have intelligence to support the fact that you have these weapons. North Korea says, yeah, what are you going to do about it? So what you have now is that the Bush people are in a dilemma. Their hypocrisy is being shown in terms of what's going on with Iraq because Korea says, yeah, North Korea says, we have them. And I think that the Bush administration, they're in fear of this, and that the North Koreans, what they're doing is they're forcing the Bush administration to the table, because I hear people talking about, you know, the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that officially it's not over.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think that if this country were to invade North Korea, that China was going to watch it on TV? I don't think so. I think that the Bush administration is in over their head in this situation, and they're hoping that they can just quietly walk through this and resolve it. But they got a dilemma because they're looking more and more like being hypocrites with Iraq, and that's why Bush is trying to go into Iraq right away.
Well, it doesn't look good, and it hasn't traditionally been a quiet peninsula. Siddiqui, thank you for your call. Sun Yung Lee, what about it? Is it possible that North Korea has already checkmated Washington? Is it possible that the United States is without good options here?
I disagree. North Korean diplomacy, we know the North Koreans are very knowledgeable about the outside world and the interests of the United States, and the North Koreans have followed the consistent pattern of wreaking havoc, creating a crisis, and then pulling away. So their posturing over the past weeks, months, I would say, is rather predictable. It's most unfortunate. Yes, it does put the United States in a bind, the timing of all this. But I don't think the North Koreans, although some might feel, North Koreans included, that their diplomacy or willful deceit and their tactics are working for now. I think the North Koreans are severely underestimating the United States. The will of the Bush administration to stop terrorism, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction.
Ash Carter, it almost sounds as though the Bush administration is waiting for Iraq to be out of the way, then it will turn on this with the kind of fierce language that it's turned on Iraq. How do we get out of this? Do we buy our way out, fight our way out? And what happens to our relationship with South Korea, which is already looking dodgy as we head into what looks like a pretty big crisis?
Well, that would be the best of all possible worlds would be that we had dealt with North Korea at an earlier stage But now we've got only a few weeks or a few months before they could materially change the situation. I think the most important thing for the administration to do at this juncture is to state unequivocally to North Korea that nuclear weapons in their hands is something that the United States isn't prepared to accept. We're prepared to accept their existence. We're prepared to talk to them about other things they want.
But not nukes.
Not nukes.
It sounds like the temperature is going to be rising. Ash Carter, professor of science and international affairs at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
And Han Park in Athens, Georgia, professor of political science and director of the Center for Study of Global Issues at the University of Georgia, author of North Korea, The Politics of Unconventional Wisdom. Thank you, Han Park, for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And in Seoul, South Korea, Sung Yoon Lee, professor of international politics and Korean history at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. Thank you for getting up early in that Korean morning.
It's my pleasure. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by...